Welcome back, everybody, to the Generation Varied podcast. This is the show where we discuss culture, health, geopolitics, sports, and everything in between. I am your host, Caleb Norris, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Ben Okenge and Jack Widener, with our wonderful producer who is behind the scenes, Sophie St. Furman. Appreciate you for being here. Guys, how's the week going?
Oh, man, I am like living on cloud nine. I just got huge exam out of the way.
I have to cut you off right there. I need everybody from LA to New York, Beijing, Milan, Paris to give it up for Ben Okenge, the future Dr. Okenge, who is finished with all of the actual classroom portions of this program. So congratulations, Ben. That was this past week. You are so dedicated. We want to say a huge shout out and congrats to you, man.
Yeah, thanks. I'm so excited. Now I pretty much just have clinical rotations and then I'm done. So that felt huge. And I'm excited. What about you, Jack? How's your week?
Ben, congrats. That's not a small feat at all. You should definitely take some time to celebrate that with people you're close with. But my week, yeah, it's been pretty well, you know, pretty slow. But what I am excited to I want to ask this. It's been on my chest, I think, this last couple of weeks. You know, we've been talking about Dune, and now knowing that you both have watched Dune Part 2, hopefully in IMAX, at least in the theaters, what's your thoughts? Because I've been like wanting to talk about this for a while, and this movie, you know, put a dent in my like 2024 year already. So want to hear your thoughts on the movies.
So my genuine thoughts are I loved it, and it started making a lot more sense to me. If you haven't seen Dune 2 yet, we might discuss spoilers here, so just go ahead and skip over this part if you haven't watched it yet, because the last thing I'm about to do is censor myself on my podcast. That's not going to happen, okay? We're just not doing that. I thought it was great. There was a portion of me that really connected because I'm starting... My biggest thing that didn't make sense was the Bene Gesserit like portion. It's like I get the conflict of families and like I understand what happened there. But that became so much clearer to me. And I am so glued into this story now. Listen, once you pulled out the religious trauma, my interest in this story just skyrocketed because I fundamentally understand what they're doing. And here are my predictions. This is not, I have not read the books. I have not read any online stories, but here are my predictions. In order for him to have what he wants to happen, which is he wants it to be a people-led like revolution, right? Or like a people-led like, you know, the
uprising.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He is going to sacrifice himself similar to like a messiah, but he's not going to come back. And that's how they're going to know that the entire prophecy was fake. I also have a theory that his mom is going to be evil in the end because absolute power corrupts absolutely. And with her being the Reverend Mother and the spiritual leader, and as fundamentalist and spiritual as they are, she really has like maximum amount of power out of everybody in this movement. And especially with how she like jabbed back at like the Bene Gesserit mother, like on the other side, like absolute power corrupts absolutely. And she is taking the cake. And the whole time I was just like, I know how this is like, I don't know how this is going to play out. I will say in terms of Zendaya, fantastic actress. I think for me though, because we like grew up watching her on the TV, like as kids, there's just something about it that I just still see her as like a teenager, as like a kid that I'm just like, this is like, but I think that's a personal thing of like my perception of her. But I thought the movie was excellent. I thought Florence Pugh's performance was excellent. I thought the twist about him actually being like the great, like the grandson of like the guy and then killing him, that is some OG, pull up if you want to. Like, I'm trying really hard not to curse right now because this is rated clean and Apple Podcasts, and I want to keep it that way. But when I tell you, I was like, I was like, pour me some Henny in a cup somewhere. Pull out the spades, put your quarters on the table, because I'm locked in right now with the crew. Okay? Don't pull up.
Kayla says, Lisa Lagaib.
Lisa Lagaib. Okay? Don't pull up on Lisa Lagaib. Okay? That's all I gotta say about
Kayla, it. Kayla, that might be the one of the best review I've seen. That's brilliant.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree. The movie was super dope. The storyline made so much more sense to me now having seen the second one. I feel like the writing was better. I feel like they even stepped up the visuals. Obviously, I'm the type of person who's going to try to, you know, find little mistakes in movies and things that don't add up and weird parts. So I was able to find quite a few of those, which it's going to happen. In a futuristic kind of movie where stuff is unrealistic, I'm going to find the holes.
Ben, what's one? Ben, what's what? Give me an example.
The one that bothered me the most, and this is not like a spoiler or anything, but all the bad guys, what are the soldiers called, Jack?
Harkonnens or...
Yeah. So all of the Harkonnens, they're like chasing people down, right? And they're walking all through the sand, risking getting caught by the worms. And like, it's this whole big deal, right? And they're wasting all this energy. And then they get up to this like rocky cliff. And then they have jetpacks that just carry them all the way up this whole cliff. And I was like, wait a minute. Why weren't they just flying with the jetpacks the whole time? And like, how are they getting eaten by these worms if they have jetpacks? Like, they could just fly up and the worm can't get them. So that was the one that bothered me the most. But nah, overall, the story was awesome. I'm super invested now. And I definitely am looking forward to another one.
Wow. I'm glad you enjoy it. You both enjoy it, but especially you, Ben, because I think when we first talked about Dune, you said, like, I don't like watching movies that people tell me to watch.
Yeah.
And the fact that you got yourself out of your schedule to watch a 3-hour movie and like
in IMAX.
In IMAX. So thank you for doing that. That way we can talk about this. But yeah, I also didn't grow up watching Zendaya, Caleb, so it was fun for me to watch because I feel like, oh, like this is like one of the first, like, I mean, she's been in a lot of movies, but this is the one that stood out to me, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of just, you know, legends and house rivalries, you know, we got something coming up this week. Actually, by the time it comes out, it has already started. March Madness is upon us. It is here. It is, you know, happening the next 3 weeks. Listeners, if you don't know what that is, it's the NCAA Division I tournament where 68 teams for both men's and women's side play a single elimination game. It's like a bracket style, like final team that stands wins. Caleb, Ben, I want to know who is your final four. Listeners, we have created a bracket already. I have a group going, but I don't know who Caleb and Ben has selected yet, because at this point, where I was recording, that they don't show us who who you get selected.
All right, so my final four on the men's side, I've got UConn going up against Arizona.
Oh, Lord.
And then Houston going up against Kansas.
Oh, Lord.
So
who's on the championship, though? Like who's
the championship? I have Arizona and Houston. And you want me to tell you who I have coming out on top?
I want to know.
All right. I got Arizona winning it all.
Really? That's crazy.
I do. I think March Madness is the time where we see some crazy stuff. We see the greats. And honestly, a part of me, like, I want Houston to win it all. I've said that before on here, but like, I don't know. I named my bracket this year just for the vibes. And that's because I genuinely have not been as plugged in with college basketball, especially on the men's side this year, as I have in the past. And so I kind of just did my quick last minute research of like watching, you know, the play styles of some of the teams that I thought had a good chance, the teams that had good seeds. And yeah, man, I just feel like the pace that Arizona plays with is like a championship type of pace. And okay, so I like it. And there, it's not like it's a wild bet. They're a two seed, yeah. You know?
The reason I have like the reaction I have is because I have been going out pretty early in my end. Like one of the first second seed team to lead the bracket. But Caleb, what about you? Like, what's your final four? Who's going to the championship and who is going to win a title?
Now, y'all know I pick my teams based off of the uniforms. so I've got Arizona, North Carolina, no way, Ohio State, and Villanova. That's my final four. I think that I think I have North Carolina taking it all. Yeah, I think North Carolina is like my ultimate winner.
Wow, I can't believe you both have Arizona in there. Here is mine. Baylor, Iowa State, Houston, Purdue, Iowa State and Houston for the final.
Baylor.
Is Iowa doing well this year?
I don't know, but I think I'm riding for Iowa. I think they can make it far. I saw this video on my Instagram reel. There's like a trapezoid graph. Essentially, they plug in all the previous tournament teams in there and show like who won, like where they're positioned on the graph and where Iowa State is positioned on the graph this year, based off the pace and the scoring, like efficiency, like it's at a pretty good spot. So that's how I went about Iowa. Also, my dad's from Iowa. That's, you know, my reason.
I don't want you to ever say anything about Ben and I picking Ohio State just because we love it again. Okay, please.
That's crazy. What seed is Iowa, Ohio State though?
That's like, not relevant to the conversation.
That is crazy.
Is Iowa really gonna win it all, Jack?
We'll find out.
Is that your real opinion? Iowa.
I think Iowa State can win.
How many championships has anybody in Iowa won?
Probably zero, but this is going to be the first one. Listen, right here.
Okay, well. Ohio State's track record is a little stronger, so please.
Shifting to... go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask about the women's side. Who you guys got?
Iowa.
Yeah, I have...
It's simple.
Caleb doesn't even say it. Yeah, my final four is South Carolina versus Texas, Iowa versus USC, and I have Iowa to win it, beating South Carolina in the final. I think South Carolina's going to win, but I got you for Caitlin Clark. I think she's going to come through in this tournament, so...
Yeah. No, I like those picks. I've got... On one side, I got South Carolina going up against Stanford. And then I have LSU going up against Ohio State. And then the championship game, I have Stanford going up against Ohio State. And my Buckeyes are going to win it all.
Absolutely. And
do not get it twisted. The Buckeyes are so solid this year. And
Lady Hoops.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, it could be because I'm here in Columbus, but the hype is real right now over Ohio State women's basketball. Mm-hmm. I genuinely think they can win it all. Unfortunately, I have, Jack, it might disappoint you. I do have LSU beating Iowa.
Look, that was a hard pick for me.
Yeah, it was probably the hardest pick.
Yeah, it was a hard pick for me.
Definitely the hardest pick for the whole bracket.
Yeah, and speaking of that, the women's tournament actually has more tickets sold so far than men's, which is very interesting. So that's going to be one thing I'm looking out for. Another thing I am going to be watching specifically this year is the sports betting. Ben, Caleb, Do you guys do any sports betting? Like, what's your experience with that?
Absolutely not. I'm saved. I don't know about y'all, but I try to live by the good book. I'm not into all that betting and stuff, being a bad steward with my income, with my funds. So I have never placed a bet in my life. Probably will this weekend once March Madness starts. and I've actually never even bought a lottery ticket. So I am not the person to ask about betting. Ben, what about you?
For me, here's the thing. I know myself very well. I have kind of like, I wouldn't say an addictive personality, but it's very easy for me to get hooked on things. And I'm very obsessive at the bare minimum, we could put it that way. And so I know that if I start sports betting, this is going to be a slippery slope. Like, I'm going to be, whether, you know, my main concern isn't even the financial aspect, which, you know, that should be a concern. For me, it's also just about like how much of my time and energy is this going to take up? Because if I get into things, like, I get all in, and I don't want to be spending all my time doing research on my picks and like having this emotional investment and all that. Yeah. Like, I just know that if I place that first bet, then it's over from there. So you won't see me betting anytime soon. Maybe if I mature a lot as a person.
I am going to send you both sportsbook promo codes after this. I'm not going to say.
The devil.
I'm not going to say who yet. From which sportsbook yet, because I won't get that sponsor. You know what I'm saying? but, you know, March Madness is fun. The reason I'm going to be looking into this, you know, from like following the teams that, you know, you both went to Ohio State. So you guys going to bond over that. You guys are going to bond over playing against rivalry teams. We're going to bond over watching underdogs, watching our bracket crumble. But this year for sports, for March Madness, you know, I think the sports betting is a new factor into bringing people to the tournament. We know work productivity is going to be low already just because the games is happening during the day. But with sports betting now in the picture, how much is that going to take the attention of people at work away? American Gaming Association, they estimated that 2.7 billion will be bet at this year's NCAA tournament. Wow. This is a staggering amount of money compared to in 2018, where 300 million were 300 million bets were put legally. Legally, that's the key word there. this is before the Supreme Court ruling open to legalize betting in the United States. Right now, there's over 38 states, with North Carolina being the new state that can that has sports book and you can do sports betting. But one more thing that I'm going to be paying attention to is comparing this to Super Bowl. A while back, we talked about Super Bowl and the impact of sports betting there. NFL Super Bowl is one game between two teams. But for this tournament here, there's going to be over 136 teams playing 134 games in the span of 3 weeks. So I'm just really curious at the very end, like, will it match the $2.7 billion or will it go a little bit beyond that? I think it's just changing the way Americans and sports fans all around the world are engaging with sports, especially now we're entering college. You know, like, what would that mean? You know, so that's what I'm going to be looking out for. And with that being said, good luck to both your brackets. Good luck to Ohio State. Both Iowa and Iowa State is going to be title. They're going to be a champion.
Yeah. Iowa, man, who knew? Iowa is becoming a basketball state.
Yeah, I was in Iowa last week, and I saw Caitlin Clark's the PR stunt that Nike did.
Shooting the parking lot.
It was really cool to see, you know, because when I was looking at that, you know, this little girl is wearing her jersey, Caitlin Clark's jersey number 22, just taking a picture. I'm like, that's impact right there. So can't wait to see what women's sports does this next 3 weeks.
Well, Speaking of billions of dollars being spent by Americans, let's transition the topics here just a little bit. Guys, have you guys been keeping up with any of the drama that's been happening in the AI space?
Not really. I know I did hear something about OpenAI. I didn't really look into it much, but like I guess kind of the background that I do know about OpenAI is that like Elon Musk is one of the people who was involved with the founding of it. But then like just over time, I think he's really called out their morals and that there's been a lot of tension there. So I'm assuming that this kind of has to do with that same type of theme, but I really didn't look into it much.
Yeah, same here. I haven't looked too deep into it. I am like trying to keep up with the AI conversation because that is just from a business standpoint, a lot of companies are looking at how AI plays into their strategy. But like what Ben said, I know Elon's pretty involved in the upfront and there's some conversation happening right now. And but no, other than that, not so much.
So I get the biggest reason why I'm super interested in these topics is really because number one, I work in the tech space. I use AI a lot. And I also am really passionate about small businesses and about just doing business better than the way America is currently interacting with businesses. So for context for our listeners, for those of you guys who don't know, Elon Musk was a co-founder of OpenAI. OpenAI is one of the leading AI platforms right now. And he has basically filed a lawsuit against them. We're going to give you a little bit more of the details here and then talk a little bit about some of the implications and that kind of stuff. But so he co-founded it back in 2015 and he's suing the organization and its leader, Sam Altman. So he alleges that they have strayed from their original mission. Their original mission of safe and responsible AI development in favor of profit-driven goals. What's funny to me about this is that number one, they're like the way that their business is set up is like this, like capped profit. It's not a good business model, but anyways, I digress. So a little timeline for everybody. 2015 was when Elon Musk helped co-found OpenAI. 2018, he steps down from OpenAI's board to avoid conflicts of interest as Tesla's AI is in development. In 2019, OpenAI transitions into a capped profit company and begins a significant partnership with Microsoft. So a capped profit company is basically like a regular company with one twist, and that is that there is a limit on how much profit the owners can make. It's kind of like a competition with a set prize, not one where everyone keeps trying to like outdo like the other person, right? Within the organization. So they only are able to profit a certain amount by their own like guidelines of like their company, right? So January of this year, Musk begins publicly voicing criticisms of OpenAI's shift in direction and growing concerns about Microsoft's influence. In February, Musk filed a formal lawsuit against OpenAI and CEO Sam Altman over alleged breaches of contract, fiduciary duties, and unfair business practices. This month, OpenAI published emails between Musk and Altman refuting some of Musk's claims. Jack, Ben, what are you guys thinking so far of what I've shared?
It's like the Battle of the Titans, it sounds like. Yeah. And AI is a new... I mean, I kind of look deeper into like OpenAI, the purpose, you know, the thing is to better the world through... easy to access, you know, this idea of open source. I'm not sure what the correct term is. And to see like where it's progressing is more, you know, the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just very curious where this will go. And just the timeline is interesting too. I look just a little bit into this. Like it sounded like Elon, when he left, you know, one of the reason was he thought OpenAI was going to fail. and he wanted to bridge OpenAI with Tesla. But that obviously didn't happen because OpenAI did succeed. I'm curious to see where this is going to go.
Yeah, totally. And Jack, one of the things that I think is funny about that is it seems just like a funny situation where, like, you know, I don't know how much of it is just Elon Musk's like ego being hurt, where it's like, no, you guys were supposed to fail without me. And now they still have gone on and been very successful. I also do see, I don't know, a slight bit of irony in the richest man in the world being very concerned about the OpenAI's profit-driven goals. I mean, of course, I do know that, you know, like, obviously, I have tons of respect for Elon Musk. He's where he's at for a reason. He's brought so much innovation and good into the world. I think he has something like 7 different billion-dollar companies. No one else in existence in human history has ever done that. But obviously, you know, profits are a part of that. Like, he's putting out all these goods and services into the world, and he's cashing out. So I don't know. Part of it seems just a bit weird where it's like, why do you care if OpenAI is trying to, you know, get their bag? Like, that's part of the game. Like, that is how capitalism works. And I don't know. Maybe there's just more context to that I don't really understand. But I'm perfectly okay with being wrong on that one. It just seems a bit weird.
Yeah. And one thing I just want to say, I think that's the biggest question is, what is the motive
for Elon?
I think even Sam, like, he is trying to figure it out what that is. So,
some of the other key factors here when we're discussing this case is, so Elon is claiming that OpenAI has violated their agreements and acted against the organization's best interest. And you'll have to forgive me for laughing, but it's like, how does Elon, the biggest question that I have, because if he stepped down from the board, I also don't think that he's, we could look this up, but I don't think that he's like a majority shareholder, because that hasn't been in any of the news. So it's like, what legal precedent does Elon Musk himself have to actually like suing this company? I don't think he has any legal precedent for it. In the exact same breath, Elon, you run Twitter. You want to talk about veering off from like original intent of a platform? You can't even get advertisers to advertise with you because hate speech is so high and violence is so high. Like, it's just, it's so crazy to me that he would even do this. Profit versus safety concerns. So he worries that OpenAI is prioritizing financial gain over responsible AI development, potentially jeopardizing humanity. I think every AI company is playing with fire right now.
Mm-hmm.
What gives you the legal standing for you to be the person to sue? Right? This is the question that we're going back to. Mm-hmm. Last but not least, Microsoft's role. Microsoft's large investment in OpenAI raises concerns for Musk about control and profit motives. Some of the implications for this, there's going to be a legal battle. The lawsuit is going to take a lot of time. It may not be successful. It may be successful. And there's this big debate on AI regulation that's going to come out from it. So I guess what questions do you guys have? I live in this, not necessarily the tech world. I don't live in the tech world, but I entertain these a lot. So what questions do you guys have?
Yeah, Caleb, just knowing that you've been working in tech for the last couple of years, you're like, you're seeing that every day. And obviously you're really involved in, looking into this case. Like, what like, what's the significance you see like this coming out of it? Or just like, yeah.
So it's hard to say what exactly is going to happen, like, from this. I'm very much torn on it. I think in general, Elon Musk is like a baby about most things. Okay. I think this is a huge farce. Lawsuits like this, I find to be very anti-American. They hurt GDP. It stifles growth. Because the biggest thing that this case is going to do is it's going to set precedent. Okay. And it's going to set precedent, that I can basically bully anybody I don't like if I have the money and the time, in a legal system. And the legal system in America was not created to be used as like a harassment tool. Right. And so over the last couple of decades, we've seen more and more basically useless lawsuits infiltrate the courts and infiltrate, you know, the legal system. And it's these types of cases are really, really bad, because what happens is this, is that it strikes fear in everybody else that's working on something great right now, that if we get an investor who gets pissed off with us eventually, they can destroy our lives in a court. They can drag our company's name through the mud. And even though OpenAI is not classified as like a small business or anything like that, what I'm really thinking about is the small to medium businesses, the small to medium enterprises. I think OpenAI is probably like a medium enterprise, but all of that to say, it's just not good precedent that it sets. It's just not. It's the same way that I feel about non-competes. It's anti-worker. It's bad for GDP growth. It's bad for innovation. Ultimately, what we should want is innovation, and we should want to be working towards a world where there is equality and like people's needs are being met and all of that kind of stuff. And we're utilizing technology so that it just makes our lives easier and we don't have to keep doing all this rat race stuff. Right. And so I just think it's so worthless.
Yeah. Caleb, that's such a good point that I had never really considered with this whole conversation, just the impact that a lawsuit can have societally, is huge, especially in this type of situation. Let me ask you something though. If you were, let's assume that Elon Musk's motives are what they say they are, right? Because we can't know for sure that, you know, he's just, that he's being a bully. Very well may be the case, but let's assume he genuinely is concerned about like AI regulation and all of that. What do you think would have been kind of his best move? And I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot with that, but it's just like, I wonder, as a big leader in that space, he does have some amount, some degree of responsibility. And although I agree with you that like his actions aren't the most productive, and for a lot of reasons that you explained so well, I just wonder, like, well, if I'm Elon, then like, what do I do if I'm really concerned?
So first of all, I think Elon Musk wields enough influence and power in the tech space that he could literally come out with Elon's rules for AI.
Yeah.
And I'm letting you know, majority of the world would adopt it. So the reason why I don't think that it is virtuous of him in doing this is that he understands the power that he holds in the tech world. He understands that, like, there's essentially probably in the private sector, he's top three most powerful people in the world. You can't convince me that he doesn't have other options. So I think he could call a council with like top five tech leaders, with him, Sam Altman, Tim Cook from Apple, who's the CEO from Microsoft. Like, he could get all of them together, agnostic from the government, and they could make decisions off of that. Right. The thing that that they're not willing to do, though, that nobody wants to do. And even Elon Musk himself, they don't want to set profits aside. They don't want to do that. They don't have a conversation about that same profits.
That is exactly, that's such a good point, because it's interesting because that's exactly what he mentions, right? Is like, oh, they're now chasing money, and then you're going to go sue someone, and these have massive financial implications. Like, if your concern is the profits, then let's not go into the money. Let's get into the conversation about morals and safety and these things that you are really saying should be valued. So I totally agree. I think it would take a lot, though, for those types of big industry leaders to get together and talk about something without being driven by money.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of like industry leaders, powerful people in the world, Sam Altman, who CEO of OpenAI, like, Kayla, like, what do you think he should go from here? Like, how does this all impact him? And should he? Yeah.
I think the biggest issues that he's going to face are this. It's a distraction. This is a huge distraction from his own investment into the company. This is going to be very costly. This is probably going to be, I don't anticipate this being a quick lawsuit. So it's going to be very costly. It's going to cost him a lot of money. You're also, even if OpenAI wins, the public nature of the lawsuit is probably going to have pretty significant damage on their reputation, especially since, I mean, you have to think, if somebody went to people back in 1992 and said, hey, the internet could mean the end of humanity. And I think, I mean, I wasn't around in 92. They might've said that, who knows, but, people are typically very, very skeptical of adopting new technologies that they don't know. And rightfully, I think out of any technology that we've ever developed, we have the right to be super skeptical about this and to really try to pressure our leaders, our nation's leaders, who are essentially worthless at this point because they're all technology. They are not in the game with us. They're not able to even have this conversation. So all of that to say, I think there's a lot of at stake for their reputation. And then there's honestly some legitimate concerns, I think, in the lawsuit that is probably going to draw a lot of scrutiny from regulators and lawmakers about the company's goals and who's holding them accountable. And then the industry impact, I think the case highlights a deep division within the AI community regarding how AI should be developed, how it should be governed. And this could further delay the establishment of clear safety standards and regulations. I think some of the reasons why Altman might be less worried, Elon has a long history of making bold claims and alleging different things and initiating legal battles and losing.
I think another thing.
So you mentioned, sorry, Jack, go ahead.
One thing Sam Altman could be worried about is just the memes. I just know whatever comes to Elon is the memes. It is like just taking a step back to see Elon and Sam working together in the beginning, building this world of AI that we are now living in. And it's going to be more in our everyday lives. It is cool to see them building something really cool. But now to see that there's a lot of tension, obviously, going to lawsuit and whatnot. I think, Kayla, your point just hits a nail on the head. It's just delaying everybody, and it's impacting the everyday people, like majority of citizens. I really appreciate you just talking about this stuff because I'm not super informed on AI. Heck, I barely use it. So it's cool to hear like what's going up on the top.
Yeah, I mean, we've been making predictions through, especially you, Caleb, throughout this whole episode. You talked about your predictions for the next Dune. We talked about predictions for March Madness. Now I want to hear your prediction. What is going to happen here in this lawsuit? You kind of hinted at Elon has lost these situations before. Do you think that's what's going to happen here when this all wraps up?
I don't think Elon is going to win.
Okay.
I don't. I do, however, think that that regulators are going to hop on the bandwagon and be like, what's going on here? And by the way, they are, in essence, a for-profit company. Their cap, the cap on their profit that they have to, like, that they have to abide by is $100 billion.
Each?
Of profit. Not of value. Of profits. So there, I think there are two companies that have, maybe three. I think it's like Apple, Microsoft, or Apple and Microsoft, and maybe
Amazon.
I don't remember. Maybe an Amazon. There might be. I know I can count on one hand how many companies have ever done that in history of being around for years. So in essence, it would probably, even if they had like a Microsoft-esque climb, it would still take them probably, you know, 15, 20 years to hit 100 billion. And that is assuming that they don't get lapped in the market, which is probably going to happen because I don't know if y'all have used Google's AI. Google's got it going on, y'all.
Oh, for real?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that Google Gemini is like, I mean, I switched over. I don't use OpenAI anymore. I actually stopped paying for that version. I pay for Google Gemini now. It's great. It's got more updated information. It's faster. Like I love it.
Hey, that is good to know. I'm writing that one down. Making kind of a transition here, talking about something I guess I've been thinking a lot about lately. I realized that coming up this year, I will have basically been out of college from my undergrad for as long as I was in there. And that was just like a baffling thing. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have thought about that, but like, we really... Has it
been 4 years?
I mean, coming up soon.
Basically.
We graduated in 21.
It feels, right, yeah.
Yeah, wow. No, all right, 3 years.
21 to 22, 22 to 23, 23 to 24. Yeah, it's been like three years.
Yeah, 3 years, 3 years. All right, so okay. I'm not as old as I thought I was for a second. But regardless, we've been out of college for a while. And that is crazy to me. And I was just thinking about how like that transition out of college is such a tough transition for so many people. Yeah. I think it's one where like you feel this pressure, like you're supposed to have a certain type of direction. You're supposed to have all these ideas and plans. And in reality, a lot of people aren't in that position by the time they graduate. So we looked up this week and found three of the top five questions that people in college have to ask college graduates. And I thought this was really interesting because now that we've been out of college for a little while, we're settled into that post-university lifestyle and I guess into a new phase of adulthood. So I guess I kind of want to hear like, yeah. I guess I kind of want to hear what you guys think about some of these questions. So the first one is, how did you find your first job and what did you wish you had known during your search?
I can start this one. So I found my job through networking. And that is what I've been told, what it was shared with me from a mentor and people who went before me. Just like networking is the way to go. Like it's not what you know, it's who you know. That's how I found my job. There's a huge story behind it. But essentially, when I was at Tokyo for the Olympic Games with OBS, Olympic Broadcasting Service, I networked a ton ahead of my time there. Because I was there for 9 weeks with different folks who are in industry that I was curious about. Not I was looking for, but I was curious about. And basically I set up meetings with them on the at Tokyo and then grab food and not this is just this person particularly in the company where I'm at right now, but before then I was just constantly networking. I think I networked 3 or 4 people to get to this person. It wasn't just one name and then boom. It's like you gotta keep going, you know. Email follow-ups, phone calls, texts. But yeah, that's why I realized like network is so important. But not only that, like being ready when the opportunity presents itself, you know, being know like, hey, no, I can take on whatever, like this job you're looking for. And that speaks to the experiences that you did in the past 4 years in college. Because you only have 4 years to truly distinguish yourself from other college students in the career you're looking to do. So, and it's very hard, but we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no, I think for myself, it's funny because I actually share that sentiment with Jack. I haven't applied. No, the last two jobs that I've had, I didn't apply for. I've either been like a job ago, there was a recruiter, and this one is like I knew somebody. And the first one I got, I met somebody like a year previously and I just stayed connected. They posted the job on LinkedIn and I picked up the phone immediately and gave them a call and was like, hey, like I want to interview for this job. I don't know how many seats you guys have open, but nobody's going to be better at this than me. And like you're not making an unsafe bet if you hire me is what I think I said. So honestly, I could not agree with you more, Jack. Like, networking. That's actually a critique that I think I have for most undergraduate programs. And that is just that they don't provide near enough coaching or training on how to go about networking, right? Not networking opportunities, but how do you go about maintaining relationships with people professionally? How do you go about meeting new people, all of that kind of stuff? And so I got my first job out of college. Like I didn't put in a bunch. I have never mass applied at anything in my life. I've literally just built relationships and I've gone from there. And I want to also pause and say that's an extreme privilege. I know that doesn't come organically to everybody. Jack and I are pretty sociable people, so we have a lot of privileges when it comes to networking and that kind of stuff, just because of the way that we are. And I don't want to minimize any of our work, but I do also want to say that if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh crap, well, I guess I'm a failure because I've had to mass apply. That is not the message that we want to send. And just because that's been our experience doesn't mean that everybody's going to have the exact same one. So yeah, I just want to say that.
Yeah, totally. And I guess some of what you're pointing at is like some of the gaps that exist in college. You know, some of these skills that may not be super well fostered in a lot of universities of you know, whether it's learning how to network or those types of things. What are some other things that you wish that you had known when you were in college? That is another one of the very popular questions that college students have.
One of the biggest thing when I look at back in my college, I mean, 4 years, I feel like I definitely squeezed a lemon. Like, I did everything I could at the university I was at. I was in student government. I was involved in intercultural activities. I did intramurals. I was involved in the community and my communication department. But taking a step back, there are a few things where I look back. I wish I leaned into those things. One is just doing more things that made me uncomfortable. And I did do things that made me uncomfortable. You know, heck, I sold bookstore door during the summer, but like when I'm talking about during academia year, doing things that made me uncomfortable. Maybe that's like speaking in front of the panel, finding ways to go into these different talks on campus and really just learn about things that's outside of my department. So I was in communication department, but I wish I went to more like, let's say, science department, business department, really just got a chance to listen, be exposed to different ideas, which that will inform me how I can approach my own craft. So I think that's like one thing has helped me, but I wish I leaned in even more is just being more comfortable. And, you know, sometimes in college, it's like a buffet. You just tried everything and then figure out what you like. And while I feel like I did try a lot of things, I wish there was, I would try it even more, you know, because there's study abroad. There is these different trips that, you know, university provides that you can go as a group. Just really just put yourself out there and just try different things, because you might find things you realize you didn't know you liked or are interested in. And that just opens up a whole new portal of like, oh, like you can start visualizing yourself doing that in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, Jack. I think what I would say is I wish I would have known, I wish I would have known myself better in college. Like now that I'm like on this side, and I wish I think the biggest thing is I wish I would have known how to set boundaries, because when I think about the times in college where I just like thinking, I had a great college experience once I got to Asbury. To the other universities that I attended prior to getting there, you're dead to me. I'm kidding. I'm teasing. I'm teasing. But I had a great college experience. It was such a safe place for me in my life to transition into adulthood. It really was, because had I gone to a big state school, mm-hmm. I have a very addictive personality too, Ben. Like it would not have been good for me.
Yeah.
And so it was a very safe place for me to start figuring out who I was. I think just in hindsight, I wanted to be liked so bad, and I wanted to be accepted by so many people. Cause I am very social, and I wish I could go back and tell myself, but just be yourself. Just be yourself. be yourself, because the people that don't like you, you don't want to be around them anyways. And the more you are yourself, the sooner the people that are supposed to be in your life are going to find you. And I wish I could go back and tell myself, I was so concerned with wanting, with just having deep admiration for people and wanting to do anything I could to keep that person like in their good graces. And it's like looking back, like when I stopped people pleasing and when I just realized like, no, like I'm great. And I don't think that's a conceited thing to say. You should be able to sit with yourself at the end of the day and say, I'm a great time. I enjoy my own company. I like who I am. I like my personality. I like how loud I get when something funny happens. I like me. I like the corny parts of me. I like the parts of me, even when I'm insecure about, like, I like me. And that's what I wish I could go back and tell, like, college Caleb, like, bub, love yourself, because you're great and you don't need to be everything for everybody.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I think one thing that I wish I had known when I was in college, and it kind of goes in line with what you're saying about knowing yourself, is that like saying no to things or closing doors or quitting things is not the same as failure.
Yeah.
Because like Jack, you talked about like you were squeezing the lemon, like, bro, I was grinding. Like you knew me very well at Asbury, and I was grinding every minute of every day, my entire time there. And I don't regret that. However, I do wish that the areas in which I was so focused and putting in so much effort, time, energy, had been concentrated a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Like for example, I loved my basketball experience. I loved the fact that I was part of a team and that I played I was a part of that team for all 4 years. But looking back now, it's like, why was I really doing that? I wasn't getting minutes. I wasn't like, there wasn't a whole lot that I was actually getting out of all of the energy that I put into that activity. And, you know, I didn't build any new character from being involved in that at the collegiate level that I wouldn't have already gotten from playing in high school or doing other things. And like I said, I don't wish that I had worked less hard. I just wish like, man, like for example, if I were to have stopped playing basketball, which was a thought that crossed my mind several times, like, I just wish I would have been able to use that time to do other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And grow in so many different ways. So just knowing the difference between like quitting and failing.
Yeah, I think on that, the only other thing that I'll say is I wish I had more people that had told me, like, you don't have to do it all. Mm-hmm. I know all of us were super connected. And I mean, I think those last, the last like four semesters, like the last 2 years, I went to school in the summer. I worked full time. I did all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so my days were literally, my average day was like a 16-hour day. And I wish I could go back and tell myself, you don't need to volunteer for everything. Somebody else will be there to stack those chairs. Somebody else will be there to help like finish after this event. It doesn't need to be you every single time.
Yeah, totally. And I guess the last question that's really popular is, what rules have you lived by post-graduation? So let's each give just one rule that has kind of guided it. All right, let's hear
it. Go ahead.
This is like, this is applicable in virtually every situation across any culture, no matter where you're at in the world, no matter what institution you're a part of. And that is my number one rule for life. Go where you are appreciated, not where you're tolerated. Okay. Wow. If the people around you don't light up when you walk in the room, baby, I'm out. I'm being so serious. If wow. people, and I try to do that even to everybody. I want to honor everybody's humanity, but I want to be excited when I'm talking to people. When I want people to know, oh my gosh, I haven't talked to you in like 2 weeks. It's so good to talk to you. Number one rule for life. That applies to churches. That applies to denominations. There's a reason why I'm not in the same organization that I grew up in. That applies to schools. There's a reason why I transferred twice. That applies to jobs. I mean, it applies to everything. If you are mm-hmm. in an environment where you are not actively appreciated and folk don't light up when you walk in a room, don't take it personally. Find somebody that does.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
I love that, Caleb. My rule that has really stuck with me just since college is just focus on being positive and your actions. You know, those are the two controllables I can control every day, how I react to things. Not what I say, but like how do I make people feel, you know? I think those mm-hmm. are things that goes a very long way. And I'm not saying in a way to like take advantage of people, but this is just generally how I want to approach my life about people around me. Like I want to make people feel cared about or listened to. Attitude and action.
Yeah, I love that, Jack. I'd say mine is similar. Mine is just that this is a rule that my wife and I live by. If you have the opportunity to do something good for someone else, whether that's being generous, whether that's doing an act of service, that kind of thing. If you have that opportunity to do it, and there's nothing holding you back except for like, maybe I don't feel like it, do it. I've had so many, and obviously it's great to do things for other people because we should want to do things for other people. But even if you want to have the most selfish mindset in the world, there are so many good things that will come back to you from being willing to say yes and helping other people. And I don't care if that's something as small as like helping someone move into their new apartment that you may not know super well. I think saying yes to helping others is just a major way to keep winning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, wow. I
love that.
I agree. Well, as always, y'all, thank you all for joining us today. We hope that this episode brightened up your day. And we truly appreciate the community that we're getting to build with this podcast. So if you enjoyed listening, don't forget to rate us 5 stars on all listening platforms. Share this episode with a friend, please. Follow us on all social media platforms at Generation Varied. And if there are any topics that you would like to hear us discuss in future episodes, Or maybe it's just a follow-up to something. Maybe you say, maybe you have a question of like, hey, how do I network? How do I do that? Like, email the podcast at generationvaried@gmail.com. Shoot us a DM, email us. We could not do this without any of you guys. Jackman, any final thoughts?
Shout out to Lori Buchanan. That is Lori Morris, my wife's mom. So she's a huge supporter on this. So.
Shout out Lori, our most dedicated supporter. We appreciate and adore you.
Yeah, for me, I would just say, let's go Bucks. I want to see our women's basketball team take it all. And that way I can look real good on this bracket.
Final thought for me, shout out my girl Yelena, my OG, my A1 from day one. I just want to say I absolutely adore you, and I'm appreciative of you. You make my life a lot better just being in it and being yourself. So love you so much. We will see you guys next week. Thanks again for listening. Y'all have a good one.